Morning, friends, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. We gather here on a cyclical basis three times a week in order to learn these ideas, gain more knowledge, and to just support each other in our search for universal brotherhood. The declaration is on the back of this little pamphlet, and basically it says that the purpose is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy. The feeling is that by this independent devotion, we take responsibility for our spiritual growth and not to have anybody else do it for us. The work and the end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. And the idea of universal brotherhood is the main thrust of the philosophy. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And in order to fulfill these lofty goals, the Lodge here in Philadelphia meets, as we said, three times a week. On Fridays, the library is open for study or discussion from 5:15 until 7:15. On Wednesdays, we are looking at the second half of the chapter, we forget the number, on Kamaloka in the Ocean of Theosophy, chapter 12. Thank you. And on Sundays is now, the doors open at 10:30. The class starts at 11 and runs until 12. And today we are looking at developing intellect and intuition. This is under the umbrella topic of the mystery of mind. Last week we looked at intelligence in the lower kingdoms. Next week we'll be discussing memory, our friend and foe. And just as a reminder, on Wednesday, March 18th, we will have William Q. Judge Day, which is a special devotional meeting in regards to Mr. Judge's contributions to the philosophy. And it's titled Philosopher, Guide, and Friend. The book table is open before and after all meetings. The library is a reference library. There is always someone there. And it's only open on Wednesdays and as Fridays, as we said. But on Wednesdays, it's open from 5:15 until 7:15. And then the meeting starts at 7:30. There's always a student volunteer in the library to help with any kind of special study you have. And on Wednesdays, the reading for the class that night and a reference is always available. The United Lodge of Theosophists is financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. Its activities depend similarly on voluntary offerings and time and work. All are invited to participate, but no obligation is imposed or implied. So as was stated, today's class, we're going to be looking at developing intellect and intuition. And when we talk about the mystery of mind, it's interesting that these two ideas are also they are considered functions of mind. So we will have two short talks, and then afterwards plenty of time for questions and discussion. So we will start first with the development of intellect. We want to start out with a reading from magazine Theosophy 30, and it kind of sets a tone for both of these ideas, an overall idea of what they're both about and how they kind of go together. So deliverance from the illusion of separateness is not achieved by means of abstract knowledge. Intellectual progress helps us to clear the mental atmosphere of chimeras and phantoms, of errors and illusions. When these hindrances are removed, the truth of spirit is revealed, self-supported, and without doubt. And we wanted to just point out this idea of self-supported, because again, it comes up as with the opening about the idea of self-induced and self-devised means and being responsible for your progress. But an inward change alone fits souls for eternal life in its fullest sense. Our apprehension of reality must embrace the whole of our nature, thought, feeling, and will. Wherever this apprehension is only partial, there will be discontent and unrest. The individual strives towards unity by throwing off all that is impure and selfish. The destiny of the human soul is to realize its oneness with the Supreme. So we think that one of the ideas that comes to mind in regards to this reading is how can we, as it says, develop intellect and intuition? The whole idea being, how are we going to clear our minds, get rid of all the distractions, the materialism, all the ideas that we have that are false? So when we're looking at this idea of intellect and intuition, then if we can develop them, then we can start clearing out our minds so that the higher nature can come through. So we'll concentrate in this talk on intellect. Now, in a regular dictionary, the definition is the faculty of reasoning and understanding objectively, especially with regard to abstract or academic matters. But theosophically, and this definition is from magazine Theosophy 11, intellect is the instrument, the power, the function or faculty by which we determine the relation between cause and effect. In other words, it is the use of the mind in man, or the instrument by which he relates the general field of nature to a particular object. So what we think this is saying is that the idea of the relationship between cause and effect, this is one of the ideas when we talk about self responsibility, self-identity, making choices, self-being, self-conscious, which is the difference between us and the lower kingdoms, because we can see what the results will be when we have an idea in our head. So intellect helps us to make the determination of when we get that idea in our head and we decide what we're going to do about that idea, and we can look into the future and see what the results of our choices, of our action, will be. And then there's the idea of what is the difference between, then some people would say, well, what about intelligence? Doesn't this fit in anywhere? And the difference between intelligence and intellect is that intelligence is the ability to acquire skills and knowledge and how to apply them, whereas intellect is the faculty of objectively understanding and reasoning abstract matters. So somebody can be very smart, but for whatever reason, their intellect, their practical application of premise to conclusion is faulty. So there's different, it's like mix and matching. And then we'll be hearing about intuition. So then the three of them, the three I's, kind of, you know, blend together, and one can be more dominant than the other. So it is said in the philosophy that this idea of intellect is one of the functions of mind. And the Dionysians gave to man this idea of intellect or mind. So it is something that's inherent in us, but we have to develop it. So, and we will be getting to that shortly. So when we're talking about mind, we know that mind is the fifth characteristic. It's one. It's of the higher triad: mind, buddhi, and atma. So, we also know that when mind is in the form, that it becomes dual. So as with anything else that's a function of mind, the intellect also is dual. So there can be a higher usage of intellect as well as one that is closer to kama. And most people think that intellect is indicative of high intelligence, but not really, because somebody can be have a very strong intellect. They can reason very well. They can determine, well, if we do this, you know, maybe this will happen. But they don't necessarily have to be brilliant. They don't have to be a genius. Because intellect is separate from intelligence. So what do we do then with our intellect? How does it function? How does it work? And it's used to investigate causes between a group. It will indicate causes between a group of objects, actions, or issues, and to determine how an action will reflect other actions. And we're looking at this idea of cause and effect. And as we had said earlier, it's mainly from self-conscious beings. So how do we go about developing our intellect? Well, we also think that having a strong intellect is something that, it, as we said, is innate, that it is something that we have, but you can develop it, you can make it stronger. And it said that if we can develop good intellectual habits, which is discerning how to learn the process of thinking from details to conclusions, and being aware that what we think and what we do has ramifications. That if, and we can't think of an example right now, but if we want to do something and there's an effect on other people, we have to be aware of that. What is it going to do? And just by researching ideas and not taking what others say as truth, that just because somebody says something and say they're in a position of power doesn't mean that what they say is true. It's important for us to look and to research and to determine if this issue is something that is true or not. And to question things and be able to assimilate our experiences. If something happens to us, to sit back and reflect and think, okay, what's my cause in this? Why did this happen? And what can I do to either prevent it again? Hopefully, if it's a good thing, to see, well, you know, maybe this is something we can repeat, but to learn from our mistakes. And try different activities, varied things, you know, maybe reading some different books rather than just one type. Trying different, you know, taking classes, learn a language. We knew a physician who decided he was going to take physics when he retired. That was his big thrill, was that, oh, I'm going to take physics, because he said it helps to use a different aspect of his brain. And, of course, living the spiritual life, living for others, meditating, studying, trying to put these ideas out for others. And as we said, it can be used for higher or lower experiences. So why are we limited then in regards to our intellect? Because since it is an action of the mind, it's there. But why can't we use our intellect in a more full manner? And it can be just somebody is lazy, distractions, materialism. There's so much that can distract us anymore that many times, despite our best intentions, we can be pulled away from our spiritual ideas. So that's about it in regards to intellect. We will end with one idea. The whole purpose of theosophy is to give to those men who want it a sound, unshakable, philosophical basis, a logical basis from which to employ the powers, functions, and faculties which we now have in the way they could and should be used. Just as man does that, his inner nature changes and he passes from reflex action, habitual action, impulsive action, reasoning action to the action of intuition and intellect, buddhi and manas. So we will now have the discussion on intuition.
So powers, functions, and faculties, these we already have these, and we've used them for eons and eons. But as we have involved ourselves in matter, we've gotten enmeshed in the materiality, and you know, we all have spiritual intuitions, but much of that has been covered up. Now there's like a lower intuition as well, because you know, we were recently watching something on the car industry, and Henry Ford in particular had really good intuitions as far as what was needed and what the future would bring and how to go about it. And he really was a genius in many ways. But he reached a point in his life where he got stuck, and So he had a battle with his son, Edsel. He kept battling with Edsel over the future of the company. And, you know, he just wanted to make the Model T forever and ever. He loved that Model T. And so it was a very practical car. It had, you know, it functioned well. It was, it worked well on the old roads because it sat up high and they were, you know, muddy and streams, and we didn't have the system of roads that we have today, the interstates. But so one can have a good business sense, but that's probably more to do with like short-term satisfying a need that's out there, or a want. It's not necessarily a need, it could be a want. So, but the spiritual intuition is something that needs to be uncovered. We all have it, and some to a greater degree than others, because it depends on where where we focus our mind and where our heart's desire lays. So if we can certainly appreciate material things, and you know, there aren't really those many true ascetics out there, although that is also hopefully one will adopt some forms of asceticism, because it does help for the intuition to note and know. So intuition, it notes and it knows without the intellect, really. It knows what the path is, because the intellect is, it's cold in a sense, and it's rational, and it reasons from premises to conclusions. But if we have the wrong premises, and we have been, in a sense, we've been indoctrinated through religion and our upbringing to, you know, to think about ourselves first, really. And, you know, if we can help others too, that's fine. But looking out for number one, the whole thing with, you know, competition. We're very competitive, and competition is good, but we also need to be more inclusive of others. And certainly that's what the philosophy is. It's, we're bringing about we're trying to form the nucleus of a universal brotherhood, as opposed to the many nuclei that are out there for this purpose or that purpose. So when we focus on universal brotherhood and the interconnectivity of all of nature and man, we're looking at, you know, we're looking at universals. We first look at universals, and then we go to the particulars, and then we go back to universals in order for us to validate that. It's kind of like to make a full circle. And so when we are not self-centered, but we're other-centered, we open up the intuition. So we have past knowledge and experiences which are resonant within our nature, and we have the keys to unlock the vault by acting for and as the one self of all. The message of theosophy was given to us that we may reach into that part of our nature which knows and notes and knows, as we said earlier. Instinct is direct perception within its own realm, and intuition is direct cognition of the truth in all things. So intuition is much more holistic. It doesn't really leave anything out. It looks for the whole realm of everything. So also, intuition is direct or immediate perception and awareness without rational thought of a truth or situation. It is the capacity to integrate and see things in the larger totalities. So it's a faculty found in Buddhic consciousness, Buddhi being the vehicle of Atma and the most spiritual aspect of soul that we can approach. Reason is the clumsy weapon of the scientist, intuition the unerring guide of the seer. So, you know, in modern times, at least in the West since the Renaissance, we've had some intuitive geniuses like, you know, Michelangelo, Einstein, and several others. And then we've had some spiritual geniuses, of course, throughout history, Jesus, Buddha, Krishna, and Lao Tzu. Now, we don't include Confucius in that category, although he was a genius, but he was more a rational, practical genius that was involved with, you know, administration and, you know, much knowledge, much useful knowledge, but he wouldn't quite fit in with the same as say a Plato would. And it is interesting that a lot of those just mentioned were contemporaries, like Buddha, or near contemporaries at least. So there was an impulse that was put forth. And of course, we have at the end of the Kali Yuga, or the beginning of the Kali Yuga, we were given the great gift of the Bhagavad Gita by Krishna, that great colloquy between the higher and the lower self. So that's what intuition is. It's developing those higher aspects. That just knows that we awaken the voice of the conscience, because we all have a conscience, but we use it to a greater or lesser degree, depending on how we rationalize. But rationalization, the whole process, is often defined an excuse for behavior that's really unacceptable. We say, you know, people rationalize. They do something and they don't want to admit what they did was wrong, or they don't want to take full responsibility. So they'll rationalize their behavior. So another quote is, occult truth cannot be absorbed by a mind that is filled with preconception, prejudice, or superstition. So manas is manifested intelligence developed through the interaction of buddhi and the intelligence of matter. So we're going to end here. We have a lot of other quotes and things here, but we all have this, we all have intuition, and we all use it to a greater or lesser degree. So the works of theosophy that we've inherited, our legacy, help to develop intuition, and most especially the secret doctrine, which is, you know, it is a difficult read, but it's something that, if we persist with it, just as with the Bhagavad Gita, if we read over and over again, we will start to awaken the intuition. It's a process. It's something that we've covered up with all the materialistic world. It doesn't really as much respect intuition as much as it should. So your comments and questions are invited at this time. Yes?
We were just thinking, if one can express intuitively something, that's got to have been knowledge gained maybe not in this lifetime, but it sure brings in the idea of reincarnation, because that intuitiveness had to come from something, from somewhere, and in this one lifetime we've never experienced anything like it, then maybe we haven't gained it in previous lives. But to know, that makes you think of reincarnation. I've had to have learned it somewhere, sometime.
Yes, well, it is one of our principles. Really, it's the Bodhi, it's the manifestation of the Bodhi principle, which is the highest principle we can access, because Atma's, you know, it's all pervasive, but and Bodhi is the vehicle of Atma, the one spirit. So yes, it's resonant in our nature, and through reincarnation and through being attracted to these universal principles, and looking out for universal brotherhood and thinking of it at all times as much as we can, and acting on it, just, we do develop it. We reclaim it. I mean, we've had it, and, you know, in other ages, less material ages, it was more evident. But, you know, we are in a very materialistic age. So it's, we still have it and we can use it, but it takes work. It takes an effort. It's not, you know, it's more evident in some and than others as well.
And these ideas that we bring forward through reincarnation into a present life, it's like we've all experienced the situation where something pops in your mind and it's like, where did that come from? And we just, it's a knowing that what we're thinking, what we want to do is the right thing. And we have to trust in our intuition, because if we keep shutting it off, if there's something pops into our heads and we go, no, I'm not going to do that, it will never get developed. So we need to trust in ourselves. And as both talks stated, it's like we've got these distractions and materialism that is kind of tamping down the expression of the intellect and intuition.
Good.
The distinction that was made between intellect and intelligence kind of struck a chord. We haven't really looked at that before. Can we kind of recap that and discuss the distinction between the two? We always just took it for granted that they're the same thing.
Yeah, intelligence is the ability to acquire skills and knowledge and how to apply them. Intellect is the faculty of objectively understanding and reasoning abstract matters. So intelligence is being able to learn something and put it into action, to use it, to understand it, to be able to explain it to others. Whereas the intellect is looking at a different side of the mind, because we're looking at, because somebody can be very intelligent and not be able to think through from premise to conclusion.
So then, intelligence is the ability to acquire the knowledge. And of course, intelligence is a principle in nature, and all kingdoms mm-hmm. have intelligence within them, right? So then the intellect is something that the human being, it almost seems like it's the tool that we have to make use of our intelligence. Might that make sense?
It certainly can be, but the intellect is we almost want to, I don't know if plain is the right word, but intellect is working on a different plane, because as was said, you know, animals have intelligence, but it's specific to whatever kind of animal it is. Whereas humans have intellect and we are able to make choices, we are able to look at, if I do this now, what will happen in the future? So we can take that intelligence that we've learned and put it to use by being able to make these choices and these decisions and know what the results will be.
A hand in the back.
Is it like adding wisdom to intelligence, intellect?
I'm sorry, wisdom what?
If you add wisdom to intellect, intelligence, do you get intellect?
Well, our understanding with wisdom, and if you want to jump in here, wisdom is more of a higher spiritual understanding of things, whereas
isn't that intellect?
But intellect can be also a lower expression, and wisdom, intellect is looking at premise to conclusion and everything that goes along with it, whereas wisdom is raising everything up to a higher level and a more spiritual, compassionate idea.
Well, we think wisdom would be a combination of intellect and intuition, because one knows how to act. There can be persons that are highly intuitive in spiritual matters, but they may not, you know, be functioning very well, we think. So someone who has wisdom has intellect and intuition operable as far as we can see.
Wisdom is akin to intuition. They're kind of operating in the same principle on the higher plane. When we think of wisdom, how to explain it to ourselves, it's you know, you have knowledge, which is not wisdom, but wisdom is the right application of knowledge. So wisdom is like if you have a judge and two lawyers are arguing two sides, and both lawyers are doing the best job they can with all the right reasons that they think are. So they have knowledge of the law, but it's up to the judge to decide which law that's being argued is the right one in this situation for the good of whoever, the defendant or the community or whatever. So it's the wisdom is the right application of principle or the right application of knowledge.
So wisdom would be distilling the essence?
It would be knowing the right thing. We think that it's akin to intuition in the sense that, well, the intuition, you know exactly what to do and how to do it and why it should be done. You don't even know why. Whereas wisdom, it's like you can see both sides, you understand, but it's more of a conscious choosing rather than an absolute, so to speak. It's not as absolute as intuition.
And wisdom generally, well, probably always comes with experience. It's something that's it's living. If we lived the life as you know, prescribed in our teachings, living the life necessary to live to benefit all, then we do gain wisdom, because we're not just thinking about our part in the picture, thinking about the whole picture. Yes.
Well, they call theosophy the wisdom religion.
Yes.
So it must be all encompassing. It's not simply a narrow perspective.
Right, it leaves nothing out.
More universal.
Right, it's universal principles. They leave nothing out. Did you?
Yeah.
want to say anything? Yes.
Is there any other creature around us in the universe that can say, I think, therefore I am?
Not that we know. Well, when you say anywhere in the universe, are we including masters, mahatmas, and adepts? Because they're certainly operating with the Buddhi is resident, and they're looking for the good of all. Yes.
Well, let us say that we're in grammar school, and perhaps say in the third or fourth grade, and we see the children sitting there. If we ask that question, at that particular time, can they say, I think, therefore I am? Perhaps not. Why?
Well, and
they have not been developed to that degree. And they're there. It's a school problem. Not the school of life, per se, but you can refer to us as being students in the school of life.
And we actually think that the phrase should be reversed. I think, no,
I am,
therefore I think. Because it is the human that, as we said, can make choices, can think from premise to conclusion. And we have that conscious idea and feeling that when we say, I am, that we know that we are conscious beings. We know that other humans are spiritual beings. And the lower kingdoms, animals especially, don't have that capability of saying, I am, because they aren't self-conscious. It's only self-conscious beings that can say, I am.
Well, the Key to Theosophy has a section on education. And we have a quote here, page 246 of the Key. Modern education makes comprehending theosophy difficult. We are filled with intellectual subtleties and preconceptions that natural intuition and perception of truth cannot act. Our minds have been cramped and distorted and forced into unnatural grooves. So we need to really make the distinction between being passively fed information or learning how to think. We're really not taught how to think in school, generally. We should say there's exceptional teachers, but we're taught to absorb. And so that, it does make comprehending theosophy difficult. By being filled with all these intellectual subtleties and preconceptions, in order to educate, and that's, to educate means to draw out. Educare means to, it's within us. It needs to be drawn out. And a good teacher will help find the talents and nurture them and draw them out. So it's very interesting. The Key, which, you know, we sometimes study, instead of the ocean, has a lot to say on education and charity and a lot of practical areas. Yes.
During the talk, the speaker said this sentence, made the statement that the intuition knows and notes. What do we mean by that?
Well, it's it's something that knows, and it notes. It's it doesn't know and say aha, and then it moves on. It really makes it a part of one's nature. It makes it something that is a possession, in a sense, if we can use the word possession, as far as spiritual knowledge. Yeah, it's like an aha experience when it knows and notes. It's not thinking rationally or intellectually, but it sees, in a sense, it sees. It's a form of sight, really. And it knows and it notes, and it makes it part of one's nature.
The idea with intellect has a similar idea. It's important to assimilate whatever it is that we have learned, experiences that we've had, and as was said, to note it. We can look at whatever it is that has happened. We can understand what has occurred, if there's any lessons to be learned, and to imprint it onto our mind, because there is an overlap with intellect and intuition. Some of the same experiences will affect the person in different ways. And if, in regards to intuition, it's that idea that something occurs and it's like, how did I know that? And so with intellect too, it's like we have to learn through our experiences and imprint them in a positive way.
Theosophy helps us to see the forest and the trees. The old expression, can't see the forest for the trees. We look at the particulars and we look at the universals. And so often in today's world, there's so much specialization that you know everything about the tree. But if there was just one tree standing by itself and the forest has been clear cut, there's a whole ecosystem that's gone, and that lone survivor won't last very long. But we really do. Helps us to see the forest and the trees. Helps us to see the particulars and the universals and their interactions, and their interrelations. And so we learn by analogy and correspondence, rather than just cramming facts in our heads, which may get us a living, but it's limited. There's always more. There are those that are satisfied with their little corner. That's fine. That's their journey. But if we're spiritual seekers, we want to see the whole picture. And, you know, we don't judge what that person's existence is or the experience that they're experiencing. That's, we need to experience all experience. And we either have experienced or will experience. But at this point, after 18 million years of incarnating and form after form after form, we should start to really, it does say somewhere in the Secret Doctrine we're a million years behind, but we did read it once. Don't remember the page number. Go ahead.
Choice of words. Self-conscious spiritual being. And when I look around, I see all forms of life. Some crawling, some flying. The difference being, I think, or progress has been made. Isn't that evolution? And if we take that word, evolve, from a grain of sand to a rock, a pebble, pebble to a mountain, mountain to a planet. The only creature that we can ever think about that can make those statements as we have, become a spiritual being, a thinker, a self-conscious thinker. That's amazing. And here in these rooms, what we're learning, that that's indeed our position, and that we're here for a purpose to help nature in her course. But we see that we revert to our original animal nature. So here we learn the secret of life. Self-conscious, spiritual being.
But the animal nature is not our nature. It's, if we revert to the animal nature, then we're just involved with kama, which is the desires, the lower desires. I mean, there can be higher desires of kama as well, but so we are not these bodies. We are mind beings using these animal forms, incorporating all the kingdoms below us. We incorporate and embody all these kingdoms of the mineral, the animal, the vegetable, and the human. We're standing at the midpoint of evolution. We're standing at the conjunction of spirit and matter. That's the symbolism of the cross. It's spirit and matter. But we're mind beings. We're, you know, we incarnated into these forms, which we ourselves formed. We designed these forms and then stepped into them as mind beings. So if we revert, man can be lower than the animal because we have more intellect and more, you know, a man can act much more viciously than an animal can act. We have that potential within us, but but that's not what theosophy is about, certainly. Yes.
Well, in the military years ago with Carl, the company commander said, "Boy, don't you see what I mean? Look at me." And those words say, "Don't you see what I mean?" Well, we looked around. We couldn't see anything. Think about it. Give me 50 laps. And the pressure of running and wearing yourself out was a punishment. Now you see what I mean. And we were better at that particular lesson.
We make it a part of our nature. And once we make it a part of our nature, we note and know. We've made the notation, we know. We're not going to make that same mistake again. That's past. Yes?
Well, we are told that the universe is intelligent, and that on this planet, intelligence has developed to a certain degree. But that is true of all the planets, that to understand that idea, we have to intuitively understand that if the whole universe is intelligence, there has to be a plethora of intelligent beings found throughout the universe. So that, you know, the use of our intuition can be developed by trusting it, by looking at it and examining it, but also acting upon it, so that when we act upon our tuition, our intuition, we develop it.
Mm-hmm.
And we either see that it's a true intuition or it's not.
Now, we do have to trust. And it may be, the first few times, it may be scary. It's like, should I or shouldn't I act on this hunch? Although it's not really a hunch, but it's something from the inner nature. And we have to keep, as was said, know. And take it in and impress it upon ourselves so that that idea of intuition can be looked at, and you have more trust in what those thoughts are that go on.
The universe is embodied intelligence, and everywhere there's intelligence. It's working on its own state, on its own plane, but it's instinct. It knows, in a sense, to what to do through instinct. And those perfected human beings that are our elder brothers, they know, and they perfected themselves, they're not going to act against what is good for all. And they don't interfere with us. But we are mind beings that have free choice, and we're learning. There's a learning curve. And we often act against our own natures unwillingly. And that's what, we're the only ones who do that. We act against our own nature, and we make mistakes. So instinct is knowing exactly what to do and doing it. And intuition is, you know, it's that higher Buddhic consciousness which those beings above us have and use, and it's fully resident in them. We haven't developed the manas, the mind principle, yet. We're developing it. It won't be solid. It won't be our solid possession, as it were, until the next round, which is a long, long, long time off. Do you have any closing quote or anything or not? Okay.
I just had a quick question.
Yes.
I was thinking, all these things that we've been talking about today, the intuition, the intellect, and experience, and all that, is all basically, to me, it seems like sprockets and cogs all working together to develop what we are to become, you know, in a sense. And yeah, I just thought, you know, we're talking about all these things, and they're all good things that help us, like I said, develop.
Yes, the universe is run by law, and the law always rules. Law rules everywhere. But we're not quite in sync. We're not quite in gear, as it were, yet. But it is. It's a well-oiled machine, in a sense. But we suffer the consequences when we don't act accordingly. And that's what karma, and it comes back to us. We have to close at this point. We've reached the hour. We hope that... you know, we hope you think about these ideas as the week goes on, and join us next week. And we will be, this topic will be memory, our friend and foe. Meeting is adjourned.